friends, educators, stragglers who accidentally stumbled on this podcast, lend me your ears. I come to bring you Classroom Conversations, a place for teachers to share and learn, created by the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Ashley Mingwasser. How do you like that creative spin on our traditional open, a la Julius Caesar? Join me on what will certainly be a ride on the computer science epiphany train today. We're talking digital creativity, part of our computer science leadership series. There are three words that, in any other context other than digital creativity, might bring strife. The words are, I'm taking space. At work, in relationships, even with your stage five clinger pet, these words might wreak havoc. But just add two more words to that when you're talking digital creativity and you're in sacred territory. Say, I'm taking space to create. Then shazam, that space is accepted, even honored, so the magic of creation can begin. With space, with openness, creativity typically abounds. According to one study, for example, for 72% of us, creative ideas emerge. Where? In the shower. Just don't slip and hit your head when you rush to write them down. So when we're talking about digital creativity today, we'll explore the untold creative aspects of technology, such as digital art, animation, even game design, and we'll discuss tools and apps that students can use to express their creativity through technology, namely in the digital preparation and presentation of their ideas and work, as long as they are given some space to create. My guest is pro-digital, pro-creativity, and soon, I hope, pro-podcast. I'm assigning that to you now, Mike. Mike Afdahl is passionate about educational technology. Mike says, creativity simply means this. I've got an idea in my brain, and I want it to come out. Now, how we choose to get it out is up to us and to our mastery of some very useful tech tools, which we'll explore. He's joining me now, the coordinator of technology services for Northwest RESA, Mike Afdahl. And by name alone, he's already an intriguing guest. Hey, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Welcome to the podcast, man.
This is amazing. Your intro was phenomenal. The music set the stage.
Thank you. I told you we would make it exciting, at least. Where does Afdahl come from?
It comes from Norway. And so our farm, which is still running, it's the Afdahl Farm. It stands for of the valley. So the farm is in the middle of a valley. So that's what they named the farm. And then the last name just stuck.
How picturesque. What creatures are living on this farm?
Sheep, actually, if you can believe it. And it's a beautiful landscape. We have a hard time believing that Ingebrigt, our great-grandpa, he left.
What was his name?
Ingebrigt.
Of course it was.
Yeah. And his other brother was Andrew. So somehow they ran out of names. And they're like, we're just going to give you Ingebrigt. And good luck in the new world. But yeah.
That is such a great story. Where in the U.S. are you from? It's not Georgia. Tell us how you got here to Georgia.
Originally, I am from Minnesota. That's where my parents had settled. And then I met a girl, and she was from Georgia. And so I chased her down and stuck around.
You chased her down willingly?
Willingly, yeah.
Yeah, and consensually, I hope.
Yep, I left everything behind.
And now you have three kids. So tell me about your wild life in this family.
Oh, so I have a son. He is going to high school, but he is into herpetology. He's into caving. He's into photography. He flies a drone, and yeah, he keeps me pretty busy. He's a black belt in Taekwondo. So he's reached that age where he can take me down, but I won't let him admit that publicly. And I have a daughter who loves to read. She's a gymnast, and she's got just an outstanding sense of humor. And my other daughter is five. She loves horses. She loves to read. She loves to play chess, if you can believe it. Yeah, we keep ourselves pretty busy between those three.
And the family spends a lot of time outdoors. Do you ever take your computer to the great outdoors?
I try not to.
Good. Boundaries.
Yeah, I try to set boundaries. Now, my kids will say I'm on my device too much because sometimes work pulls you in. But yeah, we have a rule in our house at the dinner table, no devices. And when I try to go outside, unless I'm taking a picture, I try to have devices away.
Device free. Mm-hmm. Where is the weirdest place you've taken your computer? Can you think of it?
Oh, my gosh.
Let me think. I might have one.
The weirdest place, I'll tell you the weirdest place is I had to do a virtual presentation to a group in Georgia when I was in the middle of Alaska. And this is pre-pandemic. And so they were amazed that technology of presenting virtually was an option. So I had this picturesque mountain in the background. It wasn't like a fake Zoom background like we have now.
And they were probably incredulous.
Yeah. And I had to wake up early. It was like 4 a.m. because it was 8 a.m. out east. But yeah, that's probably the furthest or most remote place I had to take it.
It makes me think of the new series of True Detective. Have you seen it?
No, but I love the first three seasons. This one with Jodie Foster?
It's set in Alaska.
Is it?
So that's why I want you to go home and watch that over the
week. Two pieces of homework is to get on more podcasts, and the other is to watch True Detective.
That's exactly right. Write that down. I think the weirdest place I've ever taken my computer was to a laboratory, which doesn't sound weird, but we were looking at some fecal matter for something. So I said, should I maybe protect my machine during this process? But you never know.
Anytime you bring up fecal matter, it's going to be weird.
Sure.
You
know? I think so, too. And definitely just having your computer with you all the time is the way of our digital age. And that's what we're going to talk about today. What is the mission of your work at Northwest RESA?
Mission of our work is to empower educators. And we do that for a variety of ways. You know, we train them, whether it's whole group, or I love working one-on-one with teachers or small groups. And we can do that in our department. It's technology and data. And data is not just looking at numbers. It is taking visualized data sets and then really transforming what the information is telling you, asking questions, and then making decisions. And oftentimes in that data process, we focus on the actual data instead of, we got to make decisions on this. So that's what I'm really passionate about with data. And then with technology, how can we make a teacher's job easier and more effective using the technology that's available? And so we love to go into schools and show them how to do that.
Very well said. Your head's in the right place. Mm-hmm. Now, Northwest, what area of the state?
So that is anything from Dade County down to Paulding and following that I-75. So we say if it's northwest of Cobb County, that's the territory that we cover.
And you get into this Empower Educator mission, honestly, because you used to be one, right?
That's right.
So tell me about that.
So I started off as a self-contained sixth grade teacher, but then was a high school math teacher and then became a department chair. I was an instructional coach, transitioned to a coordinator of instructional technology, was a technology director, and now I work at RESA. And I work with all those groups from the curriculum instruction side to the technology directors to instructional technology.
I know that in your work, you have a very ardent three-pronged philosophy about using technology of any type in the classroom.
Yeah.
What is that?
And this kind of came to me early working with technology, that if it's not, technology should do three things. It should save you time, it should engage your students, and it should allow you to learn more about your students. And if it's not doing one of those three things, then you don't have to use it. And just because something is new and flashy, it doesn't mean that it has to be used. Because you may have better methods that are meeting your educational goals than just, hey, this is flashy and it's expensive, right? But we want to look at how does this piece of technology improve those three areas.
Excellent point, Mike. Because teachers ain't got time for that, right? They have enough going on.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
So it should be benefiting them. Sure, just generally, we'll get into the specifics soon. But examples of how technology has revolutionized some of the fields I mentioned in digital art, animation, gaming.
Yeah, and really technology. Even if I'm looking back from the caveman days, they're painting on the side of the wall. But now we had new technology with brushes. And even today, we're studying Da Vinci's brush strokes with technology to understand his technology at the time. So as technology has evolved, art has had to change. Mm-hmm. And as we've had more tools, we're able to express ourselves, not just in better ways, but in more ways, and allowing that to be accessible to more people. And so I think about now, we could take a photograph, but in the old days, to make a photograph enhanced, we needed a dark room. We needed to develop our own film. But in the advent of digital photography, now we're able to produce photographs without having to have that expensive equipment. I remember the days of Wolf 1 hour photo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you had to pay a lot of money to produce a picture, but now it's on your phone and you can share it instantly. Even before it's done downloading, it can be on Instagram before it's on your phone. And so these digital tools allow that accessibility, but really, like you said, is to take something I have in my brain and how can I make that appear?
Like you said, I was quoting you, sir.
Oh, I don't like to quote myself.
I will.
And so now we are able to use things like Photoshop, in which we can edit those photos in ways that we hadn't before, or even videography. And that's one of the cool examples. For a brief moment of time, I taught a video broadcasting course, and every kid had a camera, a video camera. And if we had gone back 10, 15 years ago, we would have to have expensive equipment. They would have to do it in school. But their projects were on the weekend they would film using their phones, which if you had talked to my grandpa when he was growing up, like, we're going to use a phone to take pictures. And we would have thought he was a little crazy if he tried to do that.
Sure.
But now everyone has these tools accessible. And that's really increased access, which is really what I think technology can allow us.
And you're reminding us to pay homage to the evolution of this.
Yeah.
We didn't just arrive at where we are. It took a long time to get here. But there is a big philosophical question here, whether compared to traditional artistic forms, you've asked, is digital creativity and technology, is it more creativity? Is it less creativity? Or is it different creativity?
I think it's different creativity. And so I'll go back to the dark room. And that took a skill set in order to make a good photograph. But when we have digital photography, now it takes a different skill set for me to take this image that I have. How can I enhance it? That's Photoshop or Lightroom or other tools out there. But that's a different skill set than operating more analog equipment. And now as we enter this age of AI, which is, we're still trying to figure out, now I can just type an image into existence. But what we're finding is that it's not always perfect. It's
right.
Not the way that we want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the next iteration. But even the current version of Photoshop, now you can highlight backgrounds. You can change those backgrounds instantly. But you're still looking at, I have this image in my brain. How can I make that image appear? And the tools are transforming and the tools are evolving. But I think at the basis of art is we want to express ourselves. And we're giving ourselves more tools in order to do that.
So then the differentiation between digital creativity and the more traditional forms of artistic expression is just the tools that we're using, right? That's the gist of it. So how can educators then foster digital creativity in their young students so that they explore their artistic talents?
Yeah, so I think there's age and stage, right?
Yeah.
And I think there was this push that, oh, we need all of our pre-K and kindergarten kids on devices. And there is a time and a place for that, but it's still got to be age and stage appropriate because they're still trying to figure out their fine motor skills. And so instead of having to put them on a tablet and having them draw, which is a way that they can create art, they still need that paper pencil experience because we're still needing them to have those foundational skills.
Developmentally,
yes. And introducing technology, even early elementary, upper elementary, just not as you have to master this, but exposure that this is possible. Because going back to access, there are ways that some students aren't able to express themselves artistically with traditional methods. But now introducing some technology of here's what's possible, we're able to give them a sense that, oh, I can do this. Even though I may not be as gifted with my fine motor skills, I still have images and I still have ideas I want to express. Some of those tools may allow me to do that. And there are some tools that kind of give some guide rails, or we'll call them handlebars, that kind of give them an access point into those tools.
Yeah. You said accessibility for teachers, too. Let's talk about some of those tools that are accessible for educators and inclusive for students to facilitate digital creativity.
Yeah. One of my favorite tools is the Adobe Express, because it is free for educators, but it is an early entry into some of the more advanced Adobe suites. Photoshop, Lightroom, Premiere. You can get an ability to edit photos, to create graphic arts, to edit videos, but you don't have to have those full-blown programs because a fifth grader or a fourth grader or a second grader may not be ready for Photoshop or Premiere. So I like Adobe Express, and their AI integration has really stepped up. The other one that we really like is Canva.
Oh, yes.
Canva is, if you're not paying attention, they're trying to take over not just the creative space, but the office space.
Things are popping off on Canva right now.
Yeah. And they just had their big Canva Create launch. And so every year, like Apple's event, here's the new things that are coming out. And they keep innovating in spaces. And it's important for teachers to know that Canva, again, you can be a novice and create something that looks professional. It's just being able to take the ideas you have in your head and be able to put them out into publication. But then you can become an advanced user in Canva. And instead of just using someone else's template, you can create your own template and share it with others. And Canva, if you want the professional version, if you're not an educator, you pay for it. But educators get Canva for free. So we like free, but we also like to know where the funding sources come from. Because sometimes there's a lot of digital tools that are free like a puppy, that they're free, but what are you giving up?
Free like a puppy. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so sometimes that's your data, or in the case of educators, free may mean your students' data. And so we want to be able to protect our students' data because we are advocates for them. And if we don't know what we're giving over in order to use something for free, like Facebook, right? It's free. I haven't written them a check, right? But I know that I'm giving them access to my information. Like that's the trade-off. But when we look at student advocacy, we want to make sure us as educators are using tools that are also protecting their data.
Absolutely. And I love what you said about age and stage. I think that's a good mantra for teachers to remember because that way they can bridle the enthusiasm a bit and make sure that it's not outpacing what the students can do or what their developmental target should be, right?
Yeah.
That's what I heard you say.
Yeah. You don't want to put something in front of them that they're going to struggle with, but also just you want to give them, here's the next step forward after that, because they may be ready for it, because not every kid is learning at the same pace, especially when it comes to technology.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing I would tell teachers is that it is okay for you not to be the expert.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay for your students to know more about a particular tool than you do. And in fact, I celebrate that. And when I did video broadcasting and we were using our video editing tools and they did something that's like, I didn't know you could do that. We would stop class and celebrate that. And so that kind of gave them a carrot that, this is a bragging point. And now my mission is not just to finish the project, but to do something that Mr. Afdahl can't do. And that's important. And I think it's especially important for us as adults to model for our kids that learning doesn't stop when you graduate, that I am a learner, a lifelong learner as a teacher. And I think we need more models of that for students, that learning is not just about a grade, but it's about just keep learning. And it's not an easy process, but you still have to work towards
it. The journey of learning.
Yeah, the journey. Yeah, I like that.
A very powerful message there. I think it's also exciting for students when they're able to offer up something their teachers can use.
Yeah.
Oh, so-and-so, you hit this command and that's how you can do that. That's exciting for them and it gets them involved in the instruction. And other things that get them involved in instruction, hands-on activities. Okay,
yes.
Project-based learning, PBL, yes. What we yell. How can we empower students to experiment and iterate and refine their creative ideas with some PBL-based approaches?
Yeah, I think with PBL, I think what's the temptation is I want something that's out of the box ready to teach. And really project-based learning or problem-based learning is really, there is no right solution, and you don't have to have things that are perfected. One of my mantras is chase progression, not perfection. And as long as we are looking at a learner progressing, we're celebrating that. And especially as we're looking at project-based learning or problem-based learning, is they're not going to arrive at the right solution. And it is okay for the ideas to be creative, but then a student come to their own conclusion that, this isn't feasible. And that's not failure. They didn't complete their objective, but the goal was them to think critically.
Path.
Yeah, follow the path. And if it reached you to a dead end, now you know there's a dead end that's not going to work. But what we love to see is students creatively finding unique solutions. Because even if they don't find one that works at age 8, but we're continuing that for the next 10 years while they're in school with us, they're leaving with a large mound of experience of having to analyze a problem, finding possible solutions, and testing the validity of those solutions. And that's a skill that lasts forever.
Yeah.
Even as technology changes, that skill of pursuing solutions and really just that grit of identifying what works and what doesn't, that's going to last a lifetime.
Hopefully they're leaving with a mound of work that they have displayed or exhibited. I know there are virtual galleries, there are online exhibitions, collaborative digital platforms. How can educators leverage technology to showcase and celebrate student work?
Oh, really, it's about communication and really a platform to brag on your students. And what I love about our spaces that we have now is that anyone can publish anything and anyone can share that with large amounts of people. And when I think about the power of that, I think about Friday nights in the South and where are most people going to be? They're going to be at a football game.
At the game.
And which is why do a lot of kids want to show up and play football is because there's an audience that's waiting for them. And so for a lot of students, the grade is important, but really if they know there's an audience that's going to look at this, they are going to want to show their best.
They're creating for that.
And any amount of time that you can spend finding an audience to view your student work is a way for you to engage your students, not just in completing a project or an assignment, but really to give them pride and dedication to the work that they're doing. So going back to video, because video is so accessible now, a teacher can make their own video, edit that very easily, and some of the tools you mentioned like Adobe Express and Canva, and then being able to share that without a lot of expertise on the teacher part. And so the tools that their students are learning to show their own work are also some of the tools that teachers can use to broadcast their student achievements.
Absolutely. Can integrating digital creativity into curriculum, can it promote interdisciplinary learning among the subjects?
Of course, because really we have a unique model in education is that you go from one class to another. And that is from the Industrial Revolution that all right, you do this piece here, you go to this piece here.
Interesting.
And the way that you can help bridge that gap to see how all these concepts are interrelated is that you can use technology for them to say, all right, I need you to synthesize this. One of the great AI tools that we've discovered is something called CuraPod, and it can provide feedback on an essay from a historical figure. So as long as that historical figure has words, they're able to use that generative AI to say, this is what this historical figure might say.
How they would react.
But you're able to pull in things like historical science heroes like Newton. If we're studying European history, what would Newton have to say about the way you feel about the Tudors? What was that like? And different realms of politics in those areas, and particularly anything in American history as well. But to be able to have one platform or multiple platforms that you can showcase how ideas are coalesced together, then you're bringing students that it may not be their favorite subject, but you're able to bring in concepts into those areas that they can show their passions within your subject area.
We can utilize it everywhere. Yeah. And you mentioned AI, so now I have to go there. Yeah. So let's talk about things like VR, virtual reality, and artificial intelligence. How are they breaking into digital creativity? I think you've given us one example.
Yeah. Also, we think that AI can do the work for us, but as we've gotten into it, we see that the work that AI is producing isn't as good as we might have expected.
Right, yes. Right?
And I used it the other day because we had someone retiring and I wanted to create an image of them singing. And it took several iterations because their ears were messed up. They had seven fingers sometimes.
Oh, dear.
Yes. So it takes a patience to work with it. Again, it's about getting the idea in my head. And now I'm having to work with this other performer to help relay, oh no, this is really what I'm wanting it to look like.
Oh, interesting. Thinking of AI as a performer, it's mm-hmm. a collaboration.
It's a collaborator, and it can be a feedback mechanism. So here's my essay, or here's my photograph. Give me some feedback on that, and it can do those types of things for you. So it can give a teacher an extra set of eyes and hands. And there's other platforms. Skillstruck is one that has a great AI tutor. But what's unique about it is that the teacher can design the tutor to then provide feedback from a different lens. This is for an essay, or this is coming from the perspective of a scientist. So it can create these customized tutors that can give that instant feedback. And so it's shortcutting the system where the teacher had to be the only source of feedback.
Mm.
But in order for a student to get feedback on their essay, the teacher had to create 30, 100, 120 essays. And that time frame was pretty long, but now they can get feedback almost instantaneously and then refine their thoughts. When it comes to VR and AR, VR is one that I kind of land on a little more readily because it's interacting with the real world. VR is a little bit of a challenge for me. And I had a friend, when I had mentioned that, I struggle with the place for VR in a classroom. And she said, oh, I don't struggle. I said, oh, really? She goes, yeah, I hate it.
Virtual reality.
Yeah, virtual reality. And my thought on it is, especially coming back from the pandemic where we were isolated and our students were on devices, our teachers were on devices. But when we came back, I think the last thing that I want is for a student to be isolated in another world.
Yeah.
Whereas we're back face to face, I want that to be a community of learners. And I'll have other people that will say, but VR exposes them to other worlds out there. And I think that's true, but is that the best way? And I think I want to capture that time with my classroom that enables that community of learning to take place. And I don't know if isolating them into their own world is the way that can happen.
Yeah, you make a great point. But also, more saliently, educators should ask those questions of the tools that they're using and prepare students to harness that tech responsibly and ethically. So how do they do that?
I think one is just it's having those conversations with your colleagues. I think we tend to get into silos of those conversations. And oftentimes we're afraid when new technology comes to provide that check on, is this what is the best tool for our educational outcomes? And you need people like that to slow the conversation down, because in my classroom, I was, all right, here's new tech, let's go ahead and use it. And I needed people to slow me down and think, okay, is this the best way to do that? And so if you're that teacher out there that says, hey, this is moving too fast, that's okay for you to voice those concerns, because we do need people that say, hey, let's slow this down a little bit before we go through unintended consequences of using tech A, B, and C. We need people to say, let's slow it down. And the answer may be, hey, this is what we want. But you've given that space for that conversation to take place. And then people moving forward with that technology or tool or whatever you name it, we have confidence that, oh, this is going to be the outcome that we want, because we've taken the time to say, yeah, this is what we want to do with kids. And AI fits into that conversation as well. And I think this AI is a little bit different because it's moving so fast. The Department of Labor is estimating 85 million jobs will be replaced by AI, but at the same time, 97 million jobs will be created.
Wow.
And so we don't really have the time in order to say, let's take a few years to figure this out, because those jobs that are being replaced are happening now, and we need our kids to be equipped with those tools. But what that looks like for a 12th grader is very different than what it looks like for a kindergartner. And whether that is VR, AR, AI, whatever acronym you want to throw in there, we have to look again, like we talked about, the age and stage, what's appropriate. And I may need someone who wants to be a drone pilot. They might need VR in their high school curriculum. But just because that's needed there, that doesn't mean that has to be done at a K-2 level as well.
Exactly.
But what are the experiences that we want to provide for them that give them those jobs and experiences as options, that they can see themselves doing that? And so there's a stat I hung on to for a long time, is that 84% of students make a decision about graduation by eighth grade. And this is when I was doing work on school improvement. But I've hung on to that because by the time they reach eighth grade, they already have made decisions, not just about graduation, but what their high school experience will look like. And what they do in high school is also what's preparing them for careers. And so there is this, as we talk about age and stage, there is this exposure that we need to get our kids exposed to, because they may not know that computer science, digital arts, any technology field you want to throw in there, they may not know it's for them. But if we're waiting until eighth grade or high school to introduce them, they may not even see themselves in those professions. And we know professions, especially in technology, we need more STEM career-minded students, but that doesn't start in high school. But to be able to expose them to the technologies that these are possible careers, what is appropriate for us in fourth grade to get you there? It's you can envision yourself in those roles.
Yeah. And we're thinking all this whole episode along the lines of digital creativity mm-hmm. and how students are using the numerous tools and resources you've mentioned to do that. There are an abundance of them. It can even be overwhelming for teachers. I feel like there's so much to keep up with. So clear out the weeds,
yep.
Mike. Mm-hmm. Where can teachers begin to incorporate digital creativity into teaching practice?
I think the first place that I would go is locally. And there are teachers in your building that are using those tools. And if you're an elementary age and you don't have someone in that building, it is okay for you to reach up, because at the middle school and at the high school, they have teachers that are using those more robust tools. They have pathways that are using those digital technology tools. And it is a great resource for you to reach up and say, I got a class of fifth graders, class of second graders. What would help you as a CTAE teacher to help bridge that gap of getting from my classroom to your classroom? And if you tell a CTAE high school teacher that, they're like, oh, yes, because what they want is more students in their programs. And so to be able to reach up and say, what would be helpful in getting those skills? The other is a lot of our districts have teams, and I'm going to throw in some of our media specialists as well. The makerspace movement has taken hold in a lot of media centers. Those are great people to reach out to. And as a former instructional technologies coordinator, I loved when teachers reached out to me and said, I want to do this. How can I do that? And then I would get all excited. And, let me come into your classroom. Let me show you how this can work. So there are people in your district that are excited about this work, and I would reach out locally. If you are afraid to reach out locally, you don't know who that person is, you need other outlets, there are three places that are great. One is podcasting. There are a lot of great education podcasts that are out there, especially this one.
Thank you. Thanks mm-hmm. for that, Mike.
This is number one at the list. The other is YouTube. And I marvel at our age of students, that when they are looking to learn something, they're not waiting for class. When they're passionate about something, they're going to YouTube and they're figuring it out. And that is an avenue for you as well as a teacher, that I don't know how to do this. YouTube will
go look into it.
And the other is social media. There are several, I don't want to call them influencers, but there are passionate educators that are trying to impact the world. And they're on Instagram, they're on, don't call it Twitter, call it X. I call it Twix.
I know, right? Yeah. That's better, Twix.
Yeah.
Then it implies chocolate's involved.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
It's more enticing. Or Facebook, there's other groups that you can join. Because what I've known about educators is they don't want to keep their information to themselves. If they're passionate about something,
they want to disseminate it. Just like you. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here, Mike. You are the creative wind beneath our tech commands.
Oh, I feel like Bette Midler should be here for this.
Thanks so much, Mike. Teachers, what might you come up with now based on Mike's guidance to demonstrate the creative powers of technology? In your brainstorming, all I ask is just be careful in the shower, okay? And that's another point for bathrooms as a hub for creative thinking, as older research has shown. But I think we can rival that, educators. Maybe the next study will show how students on digital platforms are a source of fresh thinking themselves. I'm Ashley, and I've enjoyed this creative exchange today. Come back next week with Classroom Conversations on the Brain. We'll be here. Goodbye for now. Funding for Classroom Conversations is made possible through the School Climate Transformation Grant.